Amari asked, hardly daring to believe it. The word itself stunned her. The doctor replied, "Well, I'm going to try to give you one small chance to be free. It's up to you and to the spirits of hope and possibility." That much of the conversation Amari understood clearly. She thought of Afi and her unfailing faith in the future.
"We are so grateful for this opportunity, sir," Polly said, her voice breaking. "You are saving our lives."
"This could just as easily destroy your lives," he warned. "There will be patrols out and documents posted for your arrest, and dogs following your trail."
"How do we hide from dogs?" Amari asked.
"You can't. Dogs are trained to trace your smell and attack you when they find you. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat the danger."
"What happens to you when Massa Derby know you help us?" Amari asked.
"Me? I'll tell him we were attacked by highwaymen. I'll fake an injury to make it seem real. Don't worry about me. I'll be fine."
Amari stared intently at the kindly silver-haired doctor. She never would have imagined a white man willing to help her.
"You gonna tell Teeny her child not get sold?" Amari asked as she held Tidbit's hand.
"Of course. But it won't be soon," he warned.
Amari breathed a sigh of relief. She couldn't bear to think of Teeny's misery. The doctor looked sadly at the three young people in the wagon.
"You're just children,"
he mused, shaking his head. He reached under the seat and pulled out an old feed sack. From it, he took a small bundle of food, a couple of coins, and a flintlock musket. Amari gasped at the sight of the gun.
"Use this only to save your life, not for hunting. You do not want to draw attention to yourself."
"How it work?" Amari asked.
Polly spoke up quietly.
"I know how to use it. My father taught me. You half cock the hammer, pour in the gunpowder, wrap the lead ball, then stuff it into the barrel and fire."
Amari was impressed. The doctor nodded with approval.
"Are you a good shot?"
he asked. Polly looked away.
"No, sir, not very. My father tried to teach me, but I could not shoot straight."
The doctor shook his head. He gave Polly a small pouch that held the ammunition as well as the sack.
"You have enough gunpowder for only one shot. Make it count."
"Yes, sir, I will. Thank you, sir."
She carefully replaced the gun into the bag and hoisted the sack over her shoulder.
"Hurry,"
the doctor said, glancing around worriedly.
"Get out of the wagon and as deeply as you can into the woods."
Amari looked up at him and smiled as she and Polly climbed out of the wagon. They both helped Tidbit jump down.
"Thank you, sir," Amari said.
She never thought she'd be thanking a white man.
"May God have mercy on all of you,"
the doctor replied. The wagon disappeared into the distance. The three children stood wordlessly for a moment, watching it, then realizing their danger, darted into the darkness of the woods.
Chapter 32. The Journey Begins. Amari, Polly, and Tidbit moved slowly but steadily through the woods, as if they knew where they were going. Although the road had been brightly lit with the sunshine of the morning, the woods were shadowy and dim under the thick canopy of trees. Amari, somehow feeling very much at home among this greenery, led them deeper and deeper until they reached a point where no path was apparent, and the trees and bushes grew so closely together that not even Tidbit could squeeze between the thick green growth.
"Mana, let's stop for a bit and get our bearings," Polly suggested.
Amari nodded in agreement.
and they all sat down on the ground and caught their breath. Finches and swallows chirped high above them, but otherwise the forest was surprisingly silent. Polly closed her eyes and leaned against an oak tree. Tidbit whispered,
"Mana, I gotta pee."
Amari looked at the boy fondly.
"Go quick, behind that tree."
The boy ran and returned shortly to the security of Amari's arms. Amari gave him a reassuring hug. Then she looked at Polly, who sat next to her, scratching the mosquito bites on her arm.
"My name be Amari,"
she informed the two of them. Polly opened her eyes and looked at Amari with a slight frown.
"What's wrong with the name they gave you?" she asked.
"We're used to it now."
Amari took a deep breath of the woodsy air.
"Not Mina no more. Amari."
She spoke with clarity and certainty.
"If you say so," Polly said with a shrug. "I suppose it is a good name for a free woman."
"Free!"
Amari exclaimed in quiet exultation. She had no intention of ever using that slave name again.
"I want my mama,"
Tidbit whimpered. He fingered the pouch that hung around his neck.
"You be free too, small one,"
Amari whispered to him.
"You make your mama proud, you hear?"
The boy just buried his head in Amari's arms.
"Which way do we go now, Amari?" Polly asked. "It's so easy to get turned around."
"I think the river is that way," she said, pointing to her left.
"No, river that way,"
Amari replied, pointing to her right.
"I be smelling muddy water."
Polly sighed.
"How will we ever get to the north if we can't even find the river?"
"We not go north. We go south,"
Amari said defiantly.
"But Dr. Hoskins said to follow the river to the north. That's where we have a better chance at freedom," Polly insisted. "He's a doctor. He's got to know what's best for us."
"Keto se go south," Amari insisted.
"And he also said the streets were paved with gold. I think Keto's story is just an old slave's tale about a place that doesn't even exist."
"I believe Keto,"
Amari said emphatically. Her heart pounded. She had no intention of giving in to this white girl.
"He be right about Massa Clay. He be right about Doctor."
She crossed her arms across her chest.
"But he knew them," Polly insisted. "This place he called Fort Mosey is just a pretend place he's heard of, like the Promised Land, a place you go when you die, and I don't want to die. Not yet."
Her face reddened in anger.
"We die if we go north,"
Amari said quietly.
"You will forever be a slave if we go south," Polly insisted.
"You won't go north? Go alone,"
Amari said with a fierceness she hoped she had the courage to back up. Polly inhaled sharply. After a long pause, she replied,
"We would all die if we split up.
Choice up to you. Me and Tidbit going south. You come if you want."
Amari bent down and picked up the small bundle of food. She hoped that Polly wouldn't go off on her own, but she just knew she had to go south.
"Slavery's not so bad up north," Polly said slowly. "I hear tell that lots of black folks are free up there."
"I free here. I free now,"
Amari replied, digging her toe into the dirt. Then, without looking at Polly, she added,
"You white gal, you not need us."
She knew that Polly could make it alone, and would certainly find refuge quicker without the presence of two runaway slaves.
"I think we need each other,"
Polly said with quiet resolution. Amari started to reply, but a noise from behind them made her pause. A twig broke, then another. Amari held Tidbit tightly and held her breath. None of them moved.
Someone was approaching.
She motioned for them to be absolutely silent. Suddenly, emerging triumphantly from the trees, lunged a dirty and burr-covered hush puppy. The dog rushed to Tidbit, licking his face and yelping with obvious joy.
"Hush puppy!"
the boy exclaimed with happiness as he hugged his dog.
"You found me!"
The dog flopped down at the boy's feet and began to lick them too. Perhaps this was a sign of good fortune for their journey, Amari thought. And Polly must have thought the same thing, because she looked at Amari and smiled.
"Do you truly believe there is a place called Fort Mose?" Polly asked her.
Amari nodded.
"I feel it. Here," she said, pointing to her heart. "It be place where, if you get there, you be free inside and outside." "I hope Cato is right," Polly said slowly.
"But going south makes no sense to me."
"Patrols be looking north," Amari reminded her.
"How will we ever find our way to a place we are not even sure exists?" Polly asked.
"Spirits will lead us." "I don't believe in all that spirit talk," Polly said quietly. "And it is such a long way."
"Long walk anyhow," Amari replied. Then she asked, "You not trust Amari?"
Polly looked at her for several moments, as if she were weighing her decision.
"Well," she said finally, "we should get started."
Amari nodded in approval.
"No talk," she reminded Tidbit. "We must move quiet like snakes."
"Silent snakes,"
the boy whispered back. The three of them picked their way through the forest for the rest of the afternoon, stopping only to drink from the streams they crossed. Amari led them slowly and carefully through a maze of oak and elm and maple trees. Rabbits darted across their path, and deer looked at them with large, surprised eyes. But no voices followed them, and no people approached. The dog, as if he knew silence was important, did not bark once. For the first time since her capture in Africa, Amari relaxed. Even though her feet were bare and the ground was covered with sticks and pine needles, she felt no pain. For this walk was leading her, perhaps, to that destiny that Afi kept speaking of. As dusk approached, Amari signaled for them to stop.
"River be very close," she whispered. "We follow water in dark time."
"Tidbit tired," the boy whined quietly. "I want go back to my mama."
He rubbed his eyes and sat down with a thud.
"I don't want to walk no more."
Amari knew she had to let him rest.
"We stop here," she said. "Sleep some, for we walk much soon."
She gave him a small piece of meat from Lena's bundle, and he promptly fell off to sleep, his head resting on Hush Puppy. The girls could see the river in the distance and smell its earthy, wet shoreline as they hid in the darkness of the trees. Amari could hear laughter of men on boats and slow, sad chants of slaves working in the rice fields nearby, finishing up their labors for the day.
"We got to leave river," Amari whispered to Polly.
"Why?" Polly asked. "I thought the plan was to follow the river."
"All rivers run to sea," Amari explained, remembering what Cato had said. "We gotta go by land."
"How will we know which way is which?"
Polly asked, looking perplexed.
"Moss grow on north side of trees," Amari explained, trying to remember exactly what Teenie had once told her. "So we follow other side of tree."
"We can't see moss at night," Polly said reasonably.
"Stars lead us,"
Amari replied with confidence. Polly shook her head, but she stopped arguing. The two girls rested their heads gratefully on twin tree trunks, but only for a short time. Amari knew they needed to travel in the safety of darkness. Tidbit fussed when she awakened him, but he soon rubbed his little eyes bravely and marched with them into the darkness without much complaint. Fireflies blinked in the thick sawgrass near the edge of the river. Bullfrogs erupted with tuneless burps. Mosquitoes swarmed in full force, and the three travelers swatted them constantly, their arms and bodies becoming covered with itching bites. A nightingale called far in the distance. Amari lifted her head to the night sky. Bright stars decorated the darkness above, and she wondered if they were the same stars that had winked at her so far away in her homeland. Chapter 33. Deep in the Forest. Morning dawned slowly, brightening the forest. Amari, unusually weary but not willing to admit it, was glad when Polly suggested they find a thicket of trees to rest in. The girls had taken turns carrying Tidbit during the last hours of the night, and he was much heavier than he looked. Even Hush Puppy seemed tired. Amari led them to the darkest part of the forest, a place where three huge trees had fallen together, and the hollow beneath them was just big enough for the three tired travelers. "I hope the foxes or deer that usually rest in this spot won't be offended," Polly said gratefully, and she snuggled into the narrow indentation. "Might come back," Amari suggested nervously as she nestled in next to Polly.
"Tidbit too tired to care," he said, as he and Hush Puppy squeezed in next to the girls.
As the day grew brighter and warmer, the hidden children tried to sleep, but ants and mosquitoes feasted on their bodies, while the growing heat of the day made them damp with sweat. Near nightfall, they shared the last of the cornbread and ventured to the river to gather some water.
"One day free,"
Amari announced as she scratched the numerous bites on her body.
"How far freedom be, Amari?"
Tidbit asked fretfully.
"Many, many days, little one," she told him gently.
He squirmed.
"What this freedom we run into, Polly?"
he then asked. It was clear to Amari that he didn't understand such a grown-up concept. Polly pulled a leaf from an oak tree.
"Freedom is a delicate idea, like a pretty leaf in the air. It's hard to catch and may not be what you thought when you get it," she observed quietly.
Amari replied with a nod, not exactly understanding what Polly had said, but comprehending the idea. It seemed to go over the boy's head. Tidbit put his small fists to his eyes.
"I just be wanting to see my mama," he said, pulling his dog closer. "I know she be missing me right about now."
"Your mother is very proud of you, Tidbit," Polly told him. "You don't want to disappoint her, do you?"
"I don't care. I want to go back to my mama's kitchen," Tidbit cried loudly. "I be hungry and hot, and I don't like it here."
He plopped down on the ground.
"Shh," Amari said, trying to soothe him. "Got to stay quiet, little one. You want bad men's to catch us?"
Tidbit, looking miserable, shook his head.
"You gotta protect Hush Puppy," Polly told him. "Can you do that?"
The boy looked glum, but he stood up, stroked the dog, and scratched his legs. Polly and Amari looked at Tidbit with concern, but they had no choice but to move on. They covered their tracks with leaves and headed into the darkness once more. By the fifth day of their journey, they were all tired and hungry, and their feet, scratched and swollen, cried out for relief. Occasionally, Amari suffered mild bouts of dizziness, and she had to ask the others to stop so she could clear her head and catch her breath.
"Hunger make me little bit weak," she said with embarrassment one morning.
"You're not completely recovered from that beating," Polly reminded her.
"Take your time."
"No time to go slow," Amari replied. "Must get far, far away."
"You'll be all right, Amari?" Tidbit asked.
"I can still beat you running,"
Amari told him with a laugh as she got up to chase him. He giggled and darted off. Now and then they found nuts and berries in the forest, but hunger lived with them every day. Amari's mother had taught her a few things about gathering food, and Amari wished she had listened better. But she had listened to Teenie. And one evening she left Polly and Tidbit for an hour and brought back a pouch full of nuts and berries that she had gathered, walnuts, pecans, and boysenberries, as well as roots and herbs she had dug.
"Good to eat. Give us strength," she told the others.
"How do you know which roots to pick? Which herbs are safe?" Polly asked as she nibbled on the fruit of a May apple, which looked a little like a lime.
"I remember seeing these bloom in the spring back in Beaufort, but I don't ever recall eating one."
"My mother teach me," Amari replied simply.
"And Teenie too.
But I not sure about plants grow here. Some I never see before."
Amari picked those plants she recognized and others that just looked tasty. But she was very aware that some berries, like the ones Teenie kept hidden in her garden, could be lovely to look at, but very dangerous to eat.
"This one tastes funny," Tidbit commented,
but he ate the May apple hungrily. When he was done, he asked,
"Why you not bring more?"
"Never take all," Amari explained. "You dig one plant, leave two plant. Dig one, leave two. So plant come back next season. And ask plant permission."
"Ask permission?" Polly asked. "Why?" Amari wondered how she could explain the need to work in harmony with the natural world. She tried to find the words.
"Plant die. People live. Hunter ask animal before kill it. Then give thanks. Animal die so village live."
"So it's like showing respect for nature?"
Polly asked, a look of approval and understanding on her face. Amari nodded.
"I'm still hungry,"
Tidbit exclaimed softly, pulling on Polly's arm.
"We'll find some good food soon," Polly told him. "Maybe beyond those next trees on that hill," she said, vaguely pointing to some trees in the distance.
He looked in that direction, but clearly did not believe her. He whimpered and dragged the rest of the night, often having to be carried. Amari's arms ached from carrying him. A couple of hours later, Tidbit said,
"I don't feel so good."
He bent over and held his stomach, then ran off behind a tree. Amari, who also had been feeling quite nauseous, looked at Polly.
"You feel sick too?"
At that moment, Polly doubled over and ran to find another tree. Amari threw up. Even though she felt hot, when she touched her face, it felt clammy and damp. She made her way to a pile of soft branches and lay there, her stomach cramping terribly. Tidbit came back and lay down near her.
"I'm sick, Amari."
She rubbed his little stomach. It felt tight and hard against her hand. Polly took in deep breaths and asked heatedly,
"What did we eat that made us sick? I thought you Africans knew all about plants and herbs."
Amari tried to think, but her head was spinning. She felt terrible that she had made them all sick, but Polly's accusations made her angry. She certainly had not made any efforts to find food. Amari opened her mouth to retort, but grabbed her stomach in pain instead.
I so sorry. I'm not sure. I bring back many kinds.
She was going to apologize again, but she had to run to another tree to throw up once more. The three of them spent a day and a night in that area, trying to regain their strength after numerous bouts of diarrhea and vomiting. Tidbit didn't seem to blame Amari, but Polly remained furious.
"It's bad enough I'm lost in the forest with a couple of runaway slaves," she told Amari, "but now you go and nearly kill us."
In spite of her weakness, Amari tensed with anger.
"I knows you ain't no slave. You free, Polly," Amari told her coolly. "Free to leave us when you wants to. Free to go back to Massa Derby. He say he sell you to be whore," she added sharply. She turned away from Polly. Polly hung her head.
"We're in this together, Amari," she answered softly. Amari knew it was hunger, illness, and fatigue that made Polly so upset. But she also knew that Polly spoke what was truly on her mind. All of them needed proper food, and soon.
"We got to eat," Amari announced later that night.
She looked around the forest floor until she found what she needed. A sturdy stick that was pointed at the end, and a sharp stone. She slowly sharpened the stick until the point gleamed in the moonlight.
"I go to river to find food, maybe. You be here when I get back?"
"I'll be here,"
Polly replied quietly.
"I'll be back soon," Amari said, without acknowledging Polly's reply.
Amari disappeared into the darkness. When Amari returned a couple of hours later, her feet were covered with mud. In her hands, however, she triumphantly held up three large, shimmering catfish.
"I don't believe it," Polly exclaimed. "How did you do it?"
"Fish fast. I be faster," Amari replied with a chuckle.
"But how will we cook them?" Polly asked. "If we make a fire, somebody might see us."
"We eat raw,"
Amari said with authority.
"Raw?"
Polly asked. "But won't that make us sick again?"
"Raw."
Amari took the sharp stone and cut each fish open from tip to tail. She deftly removed the bones, then cut the fish into bite-sized pieces. The heads and tails she tossed to Hush Puppy, who gobbled them greedily. Polly made such a face that Amari had to laugh. But she picked up her portion and bit into it.
"Not as bad as I thought," she said, as she swallowed carefully.
Amari bit into her own portion. She chewed slowly and deliberately. Amari woke Tidbit, who tried to turn up his nose at the idea of eating the raw and bloody fish, but his hunger took over and he gobbled his piece, even licking his fingers when he finished. Then he made a face.
"You ask permission of this fish?" he asked. "Fish happy to die for you this night," Amari answered with a smile. "He tired of swimming."
"Let's see if we can get moving again," Polly suggested. "I got power of fish in me. Feel more better," Amari said as she tried to stand up.
She was genuinely surprised when Polly reached out and grabbed her hand to help. The two girls looked at each other with renewed understanding. Amari and Tidbit helped to bury the fish bones, and the three of them prepared, with fresh determination, to continue in the darkness. Chapter 34. Lost Hush Puppy. As days went by, Amari had no further luck at catching more fish. She was starting to feel overwhelmed with exhaustion. Her head hurt all the time. And even though the others seemed to have recuperated from the Mayapple incident, she didn't want to tell them that she still felt dizzy and nauseous. The forest had thinned, and hiding places were getting harder to find. A Occasionally, Amari heard wagons on the road to the east of them, and the sounds of farmers or their slaves working nearby. So the trio moved only in the darkest of night, and thus made very poor time as they traveled. Amari didn't try to find any more berries or fruit, worried that she would make them all sick again. Instead of eating, hunger ate at them. One evening, just before sunset, Amari stumbled over a fallen log and toppled to the ground in a heap. "Ow!" she cried as she rubbed her foot. "Are you hurt?" Polly asked, concern in her voice.
"No, feet just be tired of walking," Amari replied with a short laugh.
She leaned against the log, planning to get back to her feet, when something made her decide to look underneath it. Dozens of insects, worms, and grubs squirmed in the unaccustomed light. Amari took a deep breath and grabbed a handful of white, soft grubs.
"Safe to eat," she said. "I think."
She closed her eyes, put some in her mouth, and chewed slowly.
"Tastes like chicken," she said, trying to make Tidbit smile.
She offered Tidbit and Polly some grubs as well, and surprisingly, they ate them without complaint, as well as some of the earthworms. It was a matter of survival. Night after night they walked, afraid of every hoot of the owl and howl of the coyote. Some nights they crossed small streams, which gave them a chance to refresh themselves, quench their thirst, and soothe their aching feet. Sometimes they found small water creatures like crabs or clams to eat. By day they tried to sleep, under logs, in caves, in thickets. Their faces, arms, and legs became hardened with insect bites and scratches. Amazingly, however, they had heard no voices, met no other humans in the woods, nor were chased by patrollers who were looking for runaways. Perhaps Cato had been right, Amari thought. One morning, just as dawn broke and they hurried to find a hiding place for the day, Tidbit cried out in alarm,
"Where is Hush Puppy?"
Most of the time, Amari scarcely noticed the dog. He rarely strayed far from Tidbit.
"Hush Puppy must be looking for a mouse for his dinner," Polly said to Tidbit. "Can I call him?" Tidbit asked tearfully. "Maybe he be lost."
"No, child. You can make no noise."
"Too dangerous," Amari told him. "Hush Puppy come back."
Polly tried to console him as well.
"A dog can always find the boy he loves. He'll be back."
But the dog did not return that morning, or by that afternoon, or that evening. At that point, Tidbit began to cry. He refused to get up and prepare for the night's travel.
"Hush Puppy will find us," Polly tried to tell him. "He found us all the way from Mr. Derby's house, didn't he?" "I ain't going without Hush Puppy."
Tidbit spoke to the dirt he dug his fingers into.
"Tidbit, we gotta go now," Amari said a little impatiently as she lifted the child to his feet. "Hush Puppy gonna come back."
They headed out once more, but Tidbit dragged his feet and kept turning around to look for the dog. The nights had grown more difficult lately, for the warmth of the sun during the day barely lasted past dark, leaving the nights cold and clammy.
"Rain soon," Amari commented, as she clutched Tidbit's hand, almost dragging him along.
In the other hand, she carried the sharpened stick, which she used as a walking staff.
"Rain will feel good," Polly said tiredly. "I don't think I've ever been so dirty." "Hush Puppy never find me now," Tidbit wailed miserably.
Amari leaned down and picked Tidbit up, wrapping his legs around her waist, and they headed south into the wet, damp night. Amari began to wonder if she was doing the right thing. It had been her decision to come south, and she was feeling increasingly responsible for them all. What if they were simply going in circles? What if Fort Mosey didn't even exist? And she was tired, so very tired. She also didn't know how to console Tidbit, who was crying softly and begging for his mother and his dog. Finally, when she feared she could not take one more step, they came to a small cave. Amari looked at it as if it were a castle. "Do you think it's safe to build a fire?" Polly asked. Polly, too, was trembling with cold.
"Think so,"
Amari replied.
"Do you know how to start a fire?" Polly asked then.
Amari looked around the floor of the cave.
"Not sure. Not like home."
Polly grew thoughtful. "My father used to boast he could start a fire with just a stick, a leaf, and a shiny bug."
"Sound like tall tale," Amari said with a smile.
"Well, we have to try something," Polly said, as she began to gather dried twigs from the back of the cave, looking hopeful. Amari found a big branch and dragged it to the center. With lightning quickness, Amari began rubbing her sharp stick between her hands, twirling it in the center of a larger branch, the way she remembered her mother doing it. But nothing happened. Her fingertips, numb from the damp, chilly air, weren't able to twist the stick fast enough. In her homeland, she had started many fires, but usually with a burning stick from someone's cooking fire. Even Teenie's kitchen had a fire that never went out. Those hot coals had been carefully tended at night. Still, she rubbed and rubbed. Polly and Tidbit hovered close. After what seemed to be a very long time, a faint whisper of smoke snaked up from the twigs and leaves. Amari blew on it gently, and soon a small flame flickered in the darkness.
"Fire," Amari said quietly.
"Glory be,"
Polly whispered. She slowly fed the flames leaves and small sticks until it became large enough to ease their shakes and shivers. Amari gloried in its warmth, for her head felt thick, like it had been packed with straw. She felt weak and dizzy. She knew she had to find them some real food soon.
"Maybe we use gun to get food?" she asked Polly tentatively.
"We have only one shot," Polly reminded her.
"Suppose we miss, or someone hears it and finds us."
Amari nodded reluctantly.
"Do any animals live here, do you think?"
Polly asked as they stared into the flames.
"Maybe animals share with us this night,"
Amari said with a half smile. Tidbit fell into a fitful sleep in Amari's arms, his face drawn. Amari sat close to Polly for warmth and companionship, looking at the fire, thinking not of that horrendous fire that had destroyed her village, but of the smoking cooking fires that decorated the front of each household as the women prepared the evening meal. If she closed her eyes, she could almost smell the pungent fish stew. Suddenly, Amari could hear the footsteps of an animal pacing outside of the cave. She grabbed Polly's arm, and they peered into the darkness. They could get only glimpses of the creature, but it seemed to have a huge, furry head, and it seemed to be looking for a way to get past the fire. It smelled of wet fur and fresh blood.
"Fox?"
Amari whispered.
"Foxes have small heads. This one is huge, whatever it is,"
Polly whispered back anxiously.
"Could be bobcat," Amari guessed.
"Maybe we're in its home," Polly offered. "I don't think it wants us here." Amari looked around nervously.
"We got enough wood to keep fire going?"
"Not much,"
Polly replied softly.
"Where's your stick?"
Amari looked stricken.
"In fire. What if it be bear?"
The animal continued to pace. As the fire dwindled, the two girls huddled even closer together. The animal edged forward. Amari barely breathed. The scraping and sniffing and growling sounds were right at the entrance now. Suddenly, the creature bounded over the fire. The girl screamed. Tidbit startled awake and shouted with joy.
"Hot puppy!"
The dog dropped what it had been carrying and leaped joyfully on the boy. Amari, so relieved that it wasn't a bear, started laughing.
I never be so glad to see a dog. Where you been?
Tidbit asked the excited dog. He ran over to the thing Hush Puppy had been carrying and dragged it over to the girls. It was the biggest, fattest rabbit any of them had ever seen.
So that's why we didn't recognize him, Polly commented. He looked so much bigger carrying that.
And he smell like blood,
Amari said as she examined the rabbit.
We gonna eat it raw like the fish?
Tidbit asked with a grimace. The thought of another meal of raw meat made Amari feel utterly queasy.
No, little one. We cook. We be safe in cave for now.
Polly and Tidbit ran out of the cave and searched under logs for dry twigs to feed the fire. Amari found a sharp rock and was able to skin the rabbit, careful to save any part of it that might be helpful on their journey. The skin would make a good pouch, and she remembered her mother once saying that the entrails could be dried and used as string. Hush Puppy was given a huge pile of the leftover parts, which he ate with gusto. Amari carefully pierced the meat with a stick Tidbit had triumphantly brought her, and after the fire had been built up again, each girl took turns slowly turning it until it was cooked to perfection. Even the drippings were saved. They ate well for the first time since they had begun their journey. Licking his fingers, Tidbit said softly,
I miss my mama.
Amari pulled him close. A sudden image of her own mother and all that she had lost overpowered Amari for a moment. Tonight, however, she reminded herself, she must concentrate not on what was lost, but on what must be found. Chapter 35 Dirt and Clay. The next evening, feeling full of energy, the three young travelers headed out with renewed enthusiasm. The forest had turned to deep pine, the tall evergreens casting thin shadows from the moonlight. In the distance, lights from farmhouses flickered.
Hush Puppy seems to know he's the hero of the moment, Polly said with a smile, as the dog bounded after every unfortunate rabbit or squirrel that crossed their path. But he's too full to catch much now.
Amari laughed softly. Tidbit chased the dog merrily. His high spirits returned, and they all seemed to relax as they made their way slowly through the cool, dark night. They crossed another shallow waterway, where the soft river mud soothed their tired feet. For four more nights they traveled smoothly, heading ever farther away from the plantation of Percival Derby. They had no more huge feasts, but the leftover pieces of the cooked rabbit lasted a few days, and roots and tubers were plentiful every time they reached a river. Amari was glad that it was not the rainy season. The small streams they crossed would have been roaring rivers. In addition, Amari figured out a way to catch crayfish in the shallows, the tangy flesh a delicious treat as they began their seemingly unending nighttime treks. But she was tired. Tired of walking, of being uncertain, and of feeling sick all the time. Every muscle in her body cried out for rest. The night was unusually warm, and Amari had broken out in a sweat. She didn't think she could keep this up much longer. She had no way of knowing how far they had gone or how much farther they still had to travel. She had nothing to grab onto for support. It reminded her of being on the ship, where it was impossible to determine time or place, just the endless sea. She was fearful also, but she did not want to share her worries with the others. What would happen if they were found? She wiped her brow and tried to think positively, showing brave smiles to Polly and Tidbit.
Just as she let herself relax, however, her worst fears became reality. As they walked on, Amari could see nothing but shadows, some lighter than others. The trees, long, slim silhouettes, seemed to guide them most of the time. But sometimes the branches looked like arms with hands of many fingers ready to attack. And then, suddenly, the branches of a short, sturdy tree moved. Just as Amari jumped, one branch grabbed her wrist. She cried out and tried to pull her arm free. Polly instantly grasped Tidbit's hand and pulled him into the darkness. Amari screamed again and tried to turn, but she couldn't get free. Then she heard a voice full of venom and danger.
"Where do you think you're going?"
As Amari twisted to escape, she found herself face to face with Clay Derby.
"Let me go!"
Amari exploded. But Clay held her arm as firmly as the shackles she had once worn as he pulled her close to the trunk of the tree.
"I've been looking for you and that white girl you run off with for a long time now," Clay drawled. "My father would have been proud of me, God rest his soul."
"How you find?" Amari asked in furious frustration.
"Wasn't hard. You leave footprints the size of a horse."
He laughed with disdain, spat on the ground, and pulled a rope from his doublet. He first tied Amari's arms together, then tied her to the tree, pressing himself against her to keep her still.
"How you know where to look?" she wanted to know.
"Oh, the doctor made up that cock and bull story about highwaymen and seeing you all head north. But he is a poor excuse for a liar. Everybody went north looking for you, but I figured you might try something stupid like running south."
"Why you care?"
Amari asked with quiet anger.
"You are mine, gal."
His leer turned into a confused scowl.
"I have missed you, Minor,"
he admitted.
"Didn't you miss me a little? I thought you liked me."
He touched her face gently. In spite of her fury, Amari was amazed at the plaintive tone in his voice.
"Why you not just let me be?" she asked angrily.
Clay leaned over very close to her face.
"Because I aim to reclaim what's mine. You hear me, Minor?"
Amari took a deep breath, closed her eyes. And this time it was her turn to spit. She spat directly in his face. Clay roared and slapped her so hard that her head bounced back against the tree trunk. She felt herself fading into a faint, but she felt victorious. Clay slapped her again, bringing her back to full consciousness. Amari glared at him. From the shadows, Amari heard Hush Puppy growl.
"Where's the child?"
Clay asked Amari as he looked around. Amari looked at him with narrowed eyes.
"Dead," she said emphatically.
"I don't think so," Clay replied calmly. "That would save me the trouble of dashing his head against a tree.
I followed your footprints, remember?"
Amari struggled against the ropes. She had never been so angry. If he hurt Tidbit, she would kill him, she vowed.
"And where's the white girl?"
Clay asked as he watched her struggle. He seemed to be amused.
"She leave us. Go north," Amari lied.
"You know, you're as poor a liar as the doctor,"
Clay told her as he ran his hand down her arm.
"I shall enjoy punishing you when we return to Derbyshire Farms. I am master there now, you know. My father died suddenly, not long after you ran off."
"Massa Derby dead?" Amari asked with surprise. She wondered if Mrs. Derby had breathed a sigh of relief. Amari lowered her head.
"Is it wrong to be glad that someone is dead?" she thought.
"Yes, The doctor said it was his heart, but I believe he was poisoned,
Clay said ominously. Amari peered into the darkness and prayed that Polly and Tidbit would not try to save her and get caught themselves. Again she heard Hush Puppy growl from the darkness of the woods, quietly, but with menace.
What happened when we get back? Amari asked, trying to keep Clay talking.
Oh, you'll be punished severely. Perhaps a brand on your face, or maybe the removal of a finger or toe. I haven't yet decided.
Amari felt her heart quicken, but she refused to let Clay see that she was scared.
I fully intend to teach you the folly of trying to run away from me. But tonight, he said, his voice dropping low, I intend to make up for lost time. I really have missed you, gal.
He stroked her leg, and Amari kicked at him. Undeterred, Clay put his hand on Amari's other leg. A dusty blonde shadow erupted from the woods at that moment, both hands shakily holding the musket. Polly closed her eyes and squeezed the trigger. The sound was deafening. Amari screamed. Clay sank to the ground with a moan.
He be dead?
Amari asked fearfully as they crept close to him. Polly, her face showing both terror and surprise, dropped the gun, then fell to her knees and turned Clay over.
No, he is not dead, she declared with relief. It's a good thing I am such a poor shot. I didn't want to hurt him, just frighten him away.
Clay's eyes fluttered, and he groaned softly. The bullet barely grazed the side of his head.
He will be fully conscious soon. We must hurry.
She tore the knots that held Amari. Amari looked at Polly with gratitude, amazement, and new respect.
I'd not know you so wild.
Polly grinned.
I didn't know it either. I just knew I had to do something quick and sudden.
Then she got down to business.
It is his turn to be tied, she suggested.
He get loose soon, yes? Amari asked. Probably, Polly replied.
We don't have much rope. I suppose he will be able to undo the knots eventually, but at least we will have some time to get away.
He should die, Amari declared, no regret in her voice.
Maybe so, but it is not for us to do, Polly replied.
They pulled Clay over to the tree and bound him as tightly as they could.
We must get out of here quickly, Polly said. Someone may have heard the gunfire.
As they backed away from him, he began to stir.
He be waking up!
Amari whispered frantically. Polly grabbed Clay's knapsack and tossed the gun inside it.
We must flee. If he gets loose, he will surely find us and kill us.
Maybe not, Amari replied. She pointed to a spot just beyond Clay's thigh, where a large rattlesnake slithered toward him.
What should we do?
Polly whispered.
Nothing.
Amari replied quietly. Clay opened his eyes and focused slowly on Amari, Polly, and Tidbit sitting a few feet away from him. A trickle of blood oozed from the wound on his head. He pulled at his restraints.
How dare you!
He roared as he became more aware of what they had done. He yanked at the ropes.
I'll kill you for this.
I don't think so. Polly replied.
Mark my words, you'll pay for this,
he warned viciously as he tugged at the rope some more.
When we get back, I'll throw that boy in his mother's cooking pot and make her watch him die.
We not go back,
Amari told him clearly.
Oh, yes, you are,
Clay swore as he continued to struggle with the ropes.
You can't even tie a decent knot,
he crowed, triumphantly freeing one arm. "Even if you run, I will find you and catch you, and I plan to spend the rest of my life making you suffer."
"Rest of life might not be long," Amari observed quietly. The snake, unmoving, coiled, tensed and ready, only inches from Clay's leg. Clay looked directly at Amari, his face a mask of rage and confusion.
"I tried to be kind to you," he told her. "How can you repay me like this?"
She looked at him with pity. "You just not understand."
Angrily, Clay continued to wiggle and struggle with the ropes that held him. Then he turned his head and spotted the snake. He froze. The snake was motionless as well. Amari looked at Polly. Polly looked at Tidbit. They all looked toward the woods. In silent agreement, they hurried away from Clay. Part 8. Polly. Chapter 36. Should we trust him? They ran, faster than Polly thought possible. They jumped over logs and under low-hanging branches, the only thought being to put miles between them and Clay Derby. Her left side cramped and ached, but they dared not stop. With great urgency, they hurried through the darkness, Amari clutching one of Tidbit's arms, Polly the other. His little feet barely touched the ground. Sweat poured down Polly's face. Finally, after what seemed like miles of frantic running, they stopped by a shallow river to rest. Amari was breathing so hard she threw up. Tidbit collapsed by the stream and then crawled into the water to cool off. Slowly, her pounding heart slowed, but Polly knew they were probably still in grave danger.
"Do you think the snake got him?" Polly asked. "Maybe snake not mad enough to bite," Amari said as she worked to catch her breath. "Maybe Master Clay got loose and killed the snake," she added fearfully. Tidbit emerged from the water, dripping wet. "If Master Clay find us again, he gonna take me to my mama?"
Polly clasped her hand to her mouth, shocked and saddened at the child's question. Polly looked at Amari, then told Tidbit carefully,
"Tidbit, if Clay comes back, he will try to hurt us. So we have to keep running and stay very quiet. Do you understand?"
Tidbit shifted from one foot to another, looking surprisingly mature.
"I don't care if he beat me. I just want to see my mama."
He was blinking back tears. Amari grabbed him then and pulled him to her.
"I know, little one. I know."
Polly sat down with them, and the two girls tried their best to comfort the little boy. Through it all, she listened to the night sounds, but could hear no approaching footsteps.
"Do you think we did wrong to leave him like that?" she whispered to Amari.
"Massa Clay not in our hands no more," Amari replied.
Reluctantly, Polly picked up Clay's knapsack and looked through it. In it was a hunk of dried salt pork, a few apples, some wrapped cheese, and several hard biscuits. She gave one to Tidbit.
"My mama made this bread," he said, first sniffing it, then holding it close to his body.
"I want to go see my mama,"
he began to cry. Amari looked at the boy sadly.
"We come too far to go back.